Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. The trend to decriminalize and even legalize marijuana for medical and recreational use is continuing to gain momentum nationwide. Amid an ongoing recession and social unrest, some state lawmakers are considering bills that would allow Wisconsin residents with defined medical conditions to legally obtain marijuana for medical use. Other lawmakers propose taking it one step further, making cannabis legal for any adult who wants it. Supporters say regulating and taxing marijuana could bolster the state's economy, ease the burden for police and prosecutors, and potentially address racial bias in the criminal justice system. Critics say legalizing marijuana in any form has potentially dangerous repercussions and isn't worth the risk. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shireen Seward. Marijuana was illegal to purchase or consume in all U.S. states until the late 90s, when voters passed laws in many states allowing patients with confirmed medical conditions access to the drug. Since then, voters in more than 20 states have legalized the use of cannabis in some form, including in states surrounding Wisconsin. But despite polls that show more than half of Wisconsin voters support legalization in some form, marijuana for medical and recreational use remains illegal in the state. Conversations among legislators are continuing to determine whether Wisconsin will be next in line for legalization, but there are far-reaching opinions on both sides of the issue. Here to discuss the facts surrounding the marijuana debate are three guests. Joining us for the first portion of the program is Dr. Robert Guthrow, the Director of Residency Training for the Medical College of Wisconsin's Psychiatry Program in Wausau, and the Chief Medical Officer at North Central Healthcare. Dr. Guthrow, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you.
Also with us today for a view on the impact on local courts and law enforcement agencies is Louis Malepsky, the Portage County District Attorney and past president of the Wisconsin Prosecutors Association. Louis, welcome back to Route 51.
Good morning. Thank you.
Also with us today is Chris Teagarden, the Director of Policy and Advocacy for the newly formed Wisconsin Cannabis Association. Chris is the former mayor of Edgewater, Colorado, the first municipality in the world to regulate and codify adult-use cannabis. He also served as vice chair for Colorado's first judicial district's Criminal Justice Coordinating Committee and chaired a homelessness and hunger committee there. Chris, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward to the conversation.
We want to hear from you, too. Email us at route51@wpr.org or join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. We'll talk about the movement to decriminalize and regulate marijuana and the legal implications of doing so in a bit. But I'd like to focus on the medical aspect of cannabis now while we have Dr. Guthrow with us. Doctor, as a psychiatrist, what can you tell us about what marijuana physically does to our bodies when we use it? And I realize that's a bit of a loaded question.
Yeah, it is somewhat of a difficult question to answer succinctly, but marijuana really encompasses a lot of compounds that work in a number of areas of the body. You know, when we talk about marijuana and cannabis in a situation like this, we're really focusing on two components that are more commonly known as THC and CBD. And one is more known as a psychoactive compound, and the other, some believe, may have more medicinal effects, although I think that is debated among a number of groups. The general effects that we see with people when they're using this medication or this substance recreationally is you see an increase in creativity, an increase in the senses, an increase or a presence of euphoria, a decrease in anxiety and stress. Thoughts are opened, mood is improved, reports of increased confidence and decreased shyness, and better social awareness and interaction. But along with a lot of these so-called or perceived positive effects do come some negatives. You know, there's a decrease in attention, a decrease in concentration, in memory, in executive functioning. There are CBD Receptors that cannabinoid receptors all over the brain and nervous system, which can affect many aspects of our functioning, you know, in our decision making, even our balance and sleep awareness, etc.
So does habitual use of marijuana change a person's brain chemistry, or is it a temporary effect?
You know, it really depends on the person and the use. We're all built differently, and some people can use and walk away. Some people have a difficult time doing that. When we're talking about adults, a short-term use, generally the effects will wear off. But when you look at longer-term use, you can see that some people, to return to an attention or concentration or executive function baseline will take quite some time. It used to be believed that you couldn't really be addicted or dependent to marijuana and there was no such thing as withdrawal, but now we know that's really not true, that everybody experiences this differently, but it does take time for somebody to return to their cognitive baseline. There are some thoughts that it may not be possible for heavy chronic users to return to a baseline. When we look at adolescents or kids, I think the data really is much less clear. There's some evidence that using cannabis, especially at high rates and when you're young, can have long-standing effects. There have been some studies that show small decreases in IQ, greater correlation with mental health issues, potentially serious mental health issues like psychosis. There's also some studies with correlations related to increase in suicidal thoughts and behaviors. But these we can't necessarily attribute directly to cannabis. It could be the person's situation that they're in. We're not sure if it's a causation or just something that people use to self-medicate in those situations. Really, across the board, there isn't much hard, extensive data to fully guide us on its long-term and even short-term effects, to be honest.
I'm curious if the way that marijuana is regulated federally has hampered research into its use. I mean, you're saying there's a lot we don't know. So mm-hmm. Is that because of the restrictions placed on research regulations?
I believe that plays a role. It's not available for many people to use in a study setting. You know, over the last few years, that has changed to some extent, but there's some self-selection as to who can and cannot be involved. It's hard to do a fully observational study among the general population. It's hard to do, can be very difficult to do something like a blinded study, which would give us a control group to compare to people who may not know whether they're taking a placebo or marijuana. Although these studies have been done on smaller scales, to do them on a larger scale has been difficult. I think the federal government in the past has engaged in some studies that maybe would have been more effective if given more time and if full energy was put towards them, but some of those were abandoned some years ago.
What do you think would have to happen then federally to expand the research so we would know more?
Well, now that it's becoming more available in more locations, I think we have an opportunity. But research, you have to have motivation and funding to do, I think, dedicated research to really find the answers to some of these difficult questions. But obviously, if with federal government grant support and you know, some of the more academic institutions spending more time in this area, I expect that we could get closer to answering some of these questions.
As a psychiatrist, and I'd like to mm-hmm. emphasize that psychiatrists are medical doctors, not therapists.
Yes.
Do you see a potential role for marijuana in treating some psychological disorders? And I'm talking specifically about anxiety disorders or PTSD for people who have perhaps experienced some trauma in the military or in other situations. Is there a potential there?
You know, that's a good question. If you were to go on the internet and look around, you're going to see a lot of answers going both ways, that marijuana plays a big role in improving anxiety and PTSD, or that it can be problematic. When we look at some of the bigger studies that were done, there was a study done with VA, with the VA with PTSD sufferers, and they found that when people were involved in treatment, they did better if they were not using marijuana. They broke it down to people who did not use, people who used and stopped when they were in treatment, and people who started to use during treatment. And they observed them for 4 months after the PTSD intervention. And it was very clear that those who were using marijuana did not have outcomes that were as strong or as robust. There is some data to show that if you do experience a trauma and you use marijuana shortly thereafter, that you may be more likely to develop PTSD, which is interesting. But we also know that that's true with other medications that may slow the response to the negative response that our body feels, so we don't code a negative memory with all that emotion. So I'm not sure THC would be overly novel in this area, but it is a possibility to help.
What about the perception of pain? Is marijuana effective as a pain reliever, and how do we know?
So again, the studies are not robust or contradictory. I think for the most part, there's some strong belief that in certain situations, we know that marijuana can provide benefits, that CBD or THC can provide benefits. Neurological pain with MS, certain chronic musculoskeletal pain issues. There's some thought that it's helpful with fibromyalgia, but we haven't necessarily seen a study come out and say, yes, this is better than placebo, or yes, this is better than what is available. There are small stories and small reports and individual reports, but again, everybody's built different. There might be a population that will respond very robustly to a treatment of marijuana, but that might not be applicable to everyone. And I just don't think we know the answers to that yet.
What is it about marijuana that makes you want to eat? I know everybody, they joke and say it gives you the munchies, but on a more serious note, some people who are struggling with the effects of chemotherapy, for example, mm-hmm. they say marijuana can help stimulate their appetite. This is something that many cancer patients struggle with. So what is it chemically about marijuana that stimulates appetite? What's going on in the brain?
Sure. So, you know, like I talked about earlier, marijuana contains a number of compounds that are moving all over our body. They don't go and necessarily hit just one spot. We have receptors throughout our nervous system, and it affects many aspects of what we do in our lives. And stimulating appetite is one of them.
So you mentioned the addictive nature of marijuana. What are some of the specific health risks that you feel are associated with marijuana? And I'm really curious if it's possible to overdose and die. Like you can overdose from heroin, obviously. Can you overdose and die if you ingest too much marijuana?
So marijuana's safety concerns, there are rare instances where there have been severe negative medical outcomes related to marijuana or synthetic marijuana, which I don't want to necessarily confuse the topic here. But really, the difficulties with detox that you see with alcohol or heroin are not present with marijuana. And what was the first part of your question? I'm sorry.
Oh, I mean, I was just wondering if you can overdose and die from marijuana, if that's possible.
Yeah, it's very, very unlikely to have a severe issue like that. The safety concerns really come into play when you look at how marijuana is used. Driving can be impaired for a number of hours after use to somebody who uses recreationally, but just occasionally. People that use chronically and repeatedly put themselves at greater risk. You know, they have more difficulty managing, staying within the lines, or their speed is more variable, going through stop signs, et cetera, et cetera. When you combine even a small amount of marijuana with a small amount of alcohol, and you're well under the alcohol legal limit, the effects are additive. It's not 1 + 1 = 2. It's 1 + 1 = 3. So I think the most dangerous aspects of marijuana have to do with responsible use outside of the medication itself.
One final question.
Itself.
Yes, one final question before we go to a break. In your experience,
sure.
Do you think there's validity to the claim that marijuana is a gateway drug? We hear that a lot.
That is difficult. Again, the studies, we see studies going both ways that no, it's not a gateway drug. In some of the areas where it's been legalized, we're not seeing a significant increase in treatment for other substances that are different from other areas. Now, it could be argued that I'm not sure there's a place where it's been in use long enough to know that for certain, but that seems to be true with the information we have. That being said, when you look at people who are suffering from drug addiction, it's rarely one substance in particular. And when you see people who are struggling with heroin, with meth, with cocaine, with these other issues, marijuana is usually at play also. So is it causative? Is it their situation? Is it actually a gateway? I don't know if we can answer that for sure. And we probably have a much better idea in another 5 or 10 years.
You're listening to Dr. Robert Guthrow, the Director of Residency Training for the Medical College of Wisconsin Psychiatry Program in Wausau and the Chief Medical Officer at North Central Healthcare. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us. I know your time is limited today. Moving ahead, we'll hear more from Louis Malepsky and Chris Teagarden on Route 51 as our conversation continues on marijuana legalization and decriminalization efforts in North Central Wisconsin. We'd like to hear your view, too. Join us by calling 800-780-9742. You can email questions to route51@wpr.org. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Portage County District Attorney Louis Malepsky and Chris Teagarden from the Wisconsin Cannabis Association are our guests today as we discuss the pros and cons of marijuana legalization and decriminalization in North Central Wisconsin. Your calls are welcome. The number to call, 800-780-9742. You can email questions to us at route51@wpr.org. Chris, the Wisconsin Cannabis Association is a newer entity. Can you, what is it and what is the organization's mission?
Well, the Wisconsin Cannabis Association's vision and mission is basically going to be industry and economic and commercially minded. We see the cannabis industry as a viable industry as part of an economic portfolio throughout the state, throughout the region, and throughout local communities. And that's kind of where we're coming from, is to make sure that we do education outreach and participation in all levels of government and all levels of functioning and all stakeholders and community that would benefit from legalizing cannabis.
Thank you. We have a caller. Kevin is calling from the North Woods. Kevin has a question for us. Welcome to Route 51, Kevin.
Okay, yes. What I'd like to do is I'd like to draw up the contrast between what's going on here in Wisconsin and what's going on in the overwhelmingly majority of the rest of the country. I believe 40 states now approximately have some sort of medical marijuana legalization, either medical or recreational. Yet here in Wisconsin, we have a severe drinking problem. A guy here recently in Green Bay just got his 18th drunk driving. I also found out recently that parents can take their 18-year-olds into the bar to drink, and yet nothing on marijuana whatsoever. If they catch you with $20 worth, they're going to hammer you as hard as they can. But if you're, you know, got 10 drunk drivings, oh, well, you know, no problem. I like, that's what I'm pointing out. It's just ridiculous.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin. Louis, what would you like to say about that?
Well, I guess to Kevin's point is ultimately it's the district attorney in the county where he lives, who makes the decision as the top law enforcement officer of that county on how to charge, when to charge, when to divert. Just because something is illegal doesn't mean it has to be prosecuted. That's up to the local jurisdiction and the law enforcement and the district attorney representing their community and the social fabric of the community. Some communities are more tolerant of use of marijuana, for example. Some aren't. In Portage County, we divert most of our possession cases, we divert those so that people don't have the long-lasting criminal effect of simple possession, and then they can't get a job. They end up maybe on social programs paid for by tax dollars, many different social costs, because ultimately the criminal law is about conforming conduct, and there's many ways to get people to conform conduct to society's expectation. Not everybody has to be convicted of a crime.
And Louis, some communities have decriminalized marijuana in Wisconsin. From a legal standpoint, can you explain what that means? Because decriminalization isn't the same as legalization, right?
That's right. So decriminalization simply means that the effect of being legally found culpable of the substance is that you're not convicted of a crime. You may be convicted of an ordinance violation, for example. Any law enforcement officer in the state of Wisconsin, besides a state patrol, can issue a citation for possession of marijuana, and you can issue as many as you want, and it's simple possession, and then there's a monetary penalty. You're not subject to any loss of liberty, which is means it's a crime, and it's not on CCAP, and you don't have this long-lasting effect. In fact, there's a bill in the legislature right now by two Republican legislators, Senator Bernier and Representative Shea Sortwell, that's going to make 10 grams or less non-criminal and make it uniform across the state, that each area would have a uniform response to it. There's some local control going away, but ultimately it gets the ball moving on the issue of what is the proper response from law enforcement, prosecutors, and the like.
Chris, do you think that that would be a step in the right direction to have something that is uniform statewide where, you know, if you're driving in Marathon County and you cross the county line, all of a sudden it's a whole different ball of wax that you're talking about. Is it important to have a statewide consensus?
Well, I'll tell you what, being a local guy, I'm always talking to back in Colorado when I was elected official, fellow mayors. And I would always say local control, especially when unfunded mandates were coming down. So I've worked with Representative Sortwell. He's a solid guy. Even though we may have our differences of opinion on policy, I really like him. And I've already given him grief on the preemptive clause of some of the municipalities that have gone further than what this would do. But generally and overall, and just, you know, as a theoretically and tossing out my bias for local control, I think it is a step in the right direction. But obviously, I'm coming from the furthest spectrum of full legalization.
Louis, the backlog for prosecutors and public defenders in North Central Wisconsin has been well documented. We have talked about it on Route 51 before. There are defendants throughout North Central Wisconsin who have been waiting for 1, 2, sometimes 3 years for their cases to conclude. We know that nearly 600,000 Americans are arrested for marijuana possession every year nationwide. Would taking marijuana cases off your plate as a prosecutor have a significant impact on the court system from prosecutors to public defenders?
Well, according to Representative Sortwell and Senator Bernier, between 2009 and 2018, there was 161,016 arrests made in Wisconsin for simple possession. And there were 19,190 arrests for possession with intent to deliver. In Portage County, we have since 1997 had 2,541 charges referred for prosecution. Currently, we have 58 active charges in our office, and those are in the deferred prosecution program. There's a few that are in this traditional court setting. And I want to just give you a little perspective. So 2,541 charges, if we say those were all entered in the system, that would cost the state taxpayers $137,849.25, because each prosecutor has 1,277 hours per year to prosecute a case. I'm paying that prosecutor about $52,000 a year. So that comes out to 5,513 hours to prosecute 2,541 simple misdemeanors. If it's a felony level, then that hours goes up because there's prelim. So yes, you know, not to dive too much into the weeds as people accuse me of, but yes, There is a cost to the taxpayer. And that's why this is a very, very important topic, because what is the social cost to prosecute the case? We've heard from the medical perspective, because there's absolutely a medical perspective here. And what is the cost benefit analysis? And that's why I'm very interested in this topic, because we've taken the position that we're going to not prosecute people criminally if they go into a diversion program. And what we do is we make sure that they don't have long major effects. If they don't, they get cut out of our program right away. Because the longer you keep someone in the criminal justice system, the more likely they will have more criminal tendencies. They actually become better criminals. We don't want that.
What about the impact on police? Proponents say legalizing marijuana would end costly enforcement of marijuana laws, free up police resources for more serious crimes. Local police in Wausau said they don't directly target marijuana users, that typically the arrests they make are in addition to other crimes they're investigating. But you've spoken to the costs of prosecuting. There's also a cost to the police. I'd like to get both of your takes on this. Chris, let's start with you. You've worked with criminal justice reform, tracing back to your time in Colorado as vice chair of the Criminal Justice Coordinating Committee for Colorado's first judicial district. Is this a money saver for the criminal justice system as a whole for policing?
I think, coming from a larger policy standpoint of, is substance use unto itself a criminal act? I absolutely do not believe that. I think the war on drugs is an absolute failure. It has created a police state and among other particulars and nuances all the way down to the local level. That being said, can substance use and does substance use lead to criminal behavior? Yeah, it sure does. But I do think from a policing standpoint, there's going to have to be a lot more evidence and data and sound data to come out of these states that have legalized cannabis on what are the causes. And what we were seeing, at least on the regional level, that cannabis use with criminal activity was an ancillary issue. It wasn't the main issue that law enforcement was contacting subjects. There were other reasons beyond that. And cannabis use was very kind of far down the line. So there's got to be really solid data to start looking at that. And really, looking substance use as a public health issue, as more of a criminal issue, is something that we really need to start looking at more and integrating those services, whether that's with specialty courts or whether that's other things. And I'm sure Mr. Molewski can speak much more fluently than I could in those areas.
Louis, what do you think? Would taking marijuana off the plate of police ultimately save them money, free up resources? What are your thoughts?
Well, I put a lot of credit and reliance on the men and women of law enforcement to use their discretion on the laws that the legislature passed. Just because it's illegal doesn't mean anybody needs to be arrested or prosecuted. We have people who are very good people in Wausau, Stevens Point, Portage County, across the state, every day putting their lives in line. And they understand that simple possession is a lot different than someone selling heroin, which I call, and I always argue, is selling death. Now, there is a cost, sure. And that's why in Portage County, the latest canine officer is no longer certified in marijuana. That dog will not detect a marijuana. Why? Because the dog can't tell the difference between marijuana and hemp. And I don't want an officer getting in a vehicle illegally under the auspices of legal substance and then getting something that I don't want the person to have. And then my case gets, the evidence gets suppressed. So that's been an effect on this, right? But there's a, I would say this, law enforcement is already issuing tickets. They're taking the substance, disposing it, and they're really doing it on their own, as Chris indicates, of local control. A lot of the times they're not even arresting these people. They're not setting the case up. It really comes down to that DA. If the DA really wants this prosecuted, they'll send the stuff up. So that's why DAs are elected. They're supposed to represent the will of the people in the community. But this big issue is that, you know, we have to make sure, you know, Chris was part of this, that we have no more than 1 nanomilligram in a person's blood of Delta 9 THC when they're driving. We don't want impaired drivers. And I know Chris supports that, just like alcohol. We don't want people over imbibing on a substance like THC in driving. So that was there. We made a compromise on that with Senator Tess and others. So that's good. And law enforcement ultimately came to the table on that. We wanted to that bill started with, it would take it out of restricted controlled substances. We pushed back and we had a good compromise. You know, there's been some effects in Colorado. Violent crime went up 20% during the time period. You can't contribute that all to marijuana, but the arrests dropped by 50%. Their court filings went from 10,340 in 2012 to 1,954 in 2015. That's a huge drop. But here's an area that's really important. The arrests of African Americans did not drop. It was double that of Caucasians. So why is that? If it's a racial issue, then we have to work on that. So there's a lot of things to work on. But at the end of the day, I would say this, law enforcement really uses their discretion. And if they're not, then the public can always talk to the chief, the DA, and that officer will be talked to try to understand their perspective. Because we want to focus on methamphetamine and heroin. That's what's causing the scourge in our communities.
One of the biggest arguments in support of legalization is, and we hear this all the time, it's the economy, the potential impact on the economy. Chris, what are your thoughts on that? Do you have an idea of just how much revenue Wisconsin could see if legalization were to happen?
Well, there's a number of factors into that equation. It really starts with the regulatory system that is put into place on the state level. So let's just say that Wisconsin's actually going to look at legalization. Are they going to go a more of a competitive licensing structure that Illinois does and basically controls how many licenses and what licenses can go out? Unlike Colorado, which we call an open state in the cannabis industry, is that once the state sets its regulations, municipalities can opt in or opt out. Now, on that economic driver, Colorado is very similar in population to Wisconsin. And obviously, Colorado's market is more mature than others, since they were the first state to legalize. Their economic output, I think for the last 2019, was $1.77 billion. Over 40,000 people were licensed to work in the cannabis industry. When we start looking at government and taxes, I personally think that taxes are way too high on the state level, and I think that it should shift more to local communities being able to tax higher. That's my own personal bias, not official stance by anybody I represent. But that's kind of my take on how things are set up. But just in my city of Edgewater, which was just a little under 1 square mile in 2015, our general operating budget was from 6 dispensaries, 20% of cannabis taxes, and we did a lot with that. And I know there are a lot of municipalities in Wisconsin struggling to make ends meet, especially with infrastructure.
So we've got a demonstrated potential positive impact from an economic standpoint. But Louis, you've mentioned there's a flip side of that, that there are steep costs for society that are possible too. What are some of those issues?
Well, as your caller from the Northwoods indicated, look, you know, there's an effect of overconsumption of alcohol. I mean, we have way too many OWI deaths and social costs related to alcohol. And that's a concern, of course, on marijuana. And, you know, when I speak to law enforcement, they're very concerned about, for example, edibles coming back and affecting children, edibles that are marked targeted toward children because they look like teddy bears and things like that. And of course, the cigarette industry was doing the same thing. So on the regulatory side, we have to be really careful on this. You know, and I understand what Chris's point is. It's you know, people are using this, so what's the point? And I also recognize that every state around Wisconsin has some form of legalization. So that is something we have to look at because we need to balance these resources. But We already are seeing, for example, the policing effect, where we have large amount of shipments coming back from legal states coming to Wisconsin, and that's illegal. And we will prosecute people that are bringing large amounts over state lines into Wisconsin to sell, because now they're not licensed as they are in Colorado, for example. We don't know what the product is, how much THC is. And if the doctor was still online, he'll tell you that edibles have, some of these have very high THC amounts, and they're putting warnings on these because of the health consequences. So, you know, it's sort of like how much alcohol percentage is in the bottle, right? It's the same thing here. So that's why where law enforcement gets concerned about these. And, you know, I'm still concerned about what we're going to have in Wisconsin. Go ahead.
Louis Malepsky and Chris Teagarden, our guests today on Route 51, a conversation about the impacts marijuana legalization and decriminalization could have in north central Wisconsin communities. When we return, a look at what some area communities are already doing and what the future could hold for the region. Join us by calling 800-780-9742. You can email questions to route51@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Portage County District Attorney Louis Malepsky and Chris Cart Teagarden from the Wisconsin Cannabis Association are our guests today for a discussion on the impact marijuana legalization and decriminalization could have in north central Wisconsin. We'd love to hear from you, too. Email us at route51@wpr.org or join us by phone at 800-780-9742. Be sure to allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. Just before the break, we were talking about edibles and the high THC content in those edibles. And proponents say of legalization say if marijuana is legal, it'll be regulated. That'll allow consumers to know the type of drug they're using and the potency level, the THC level, which we know is much, much higher than the marijuana of the 70s and 80s. So, and kind of the argument is you wouldn't meet somebody in a back alley to buy a bottle of vodka because you never know what's in it, right? So using that logic, would it be medically safer if marijuana was legally regulated and we knew what was in anything that we might purchase? Chris, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think Mr. Malepsky really was spot on, especially with ingesting of edibles. We saw a lot of cannabis tourism that people are over consuming because the way it is ingested, it takes a longer time to get into your system. Some people ingest more than what they need to do. And so that is difficult on that regulatory package, because even as the doctor said at the beginning, it's individualized on how cannabis and THC particularly interacts with people. Now, I do believe that, you know, they tried, you know, with different types of packaging and tighten up that regulatory system. And there are different strains that have different levels of THC. But really, you know, it comes down to that desire, you know, of what the effects that you're trying to do. And it gets very nuanced that I won't get into. But at the end of the day, I think that, you know, one of the big things, especially with law enforcement and the public in general, is, you know, you want to eliminate the illicit market and also eliminate the gray market. So some proponents would say, okay, fully legalizing and regulating it, we'll get rid of that. We aren't seeing that to a significant effect. And there could be all different kinds of reasons for that. I would say, you know, there education, especially if it is going to be legalized on, you know, what products do, how they're ingested and how they take effect and how they're sold, quite frankly.
Well, and how do you keep them out of the hands of kids, especially when you're looking at something like a gummy, an edible, that's easy to ingest and, teenagers look at it and think it's harmless. How do you keep those out of the hands of kids? Chris, what did they do in Colorado?
Well, they did a lot of regulations around single packaging, warnings, other signs such as that. I mean, obviously having to be 21 years of age and going into dispensary precluded, you know, just teenagers of getting it, but obviously teenagers are getting it. So really it was just the state trying to tighten more regulations around those products. And I think some of the advertising as well that they were starting to look at. And I think there, I just saw yesterday that a bill was being put forth, which I don't think it'll see committee, but actually regulating all THC products to be under 15% THC.
Okay. Louis, you talked a little bit earlier about the racial disparity, and we know statistics show a significant racial disparity enforcement-wise with marijuana laws. White people and Black people use marijuana at roughly the same rate, but a Black person in the U.S. is almost four times more likely to be arrested for marijuana possession on average. Would legalizing marijuana help correct that disparity?
Well, if it was legal, there would be no basis to arrest, of course, right? Because they're in possession of a lawful substance or, you know, the question though is, you know, in Wisconsin, if we're going to decriminalize it, which in most communities it already is, they're issuing citations if they're issuing a citation. The issue is, and that's something very important, why in Colorado still are African Americans being arrested at nearly twice the rate of whites? That's something that I'd really want to know, right? And I want to speak to that district attorney in Colorado and Denver or wherever the vast majority of arrests are and ask, you know, what's going on? Because there may be something else, right? Maybe they're in possession. Maybe that may be the initial arrest that's part of the charging and they were selling something else like heroin, for example, or methamphetamine. But, you know, I'm always open. And I think all my colleague prosecutors are very open there to understanding statistics and also continue to educate ourselves on racial disparity, bias. And if there is bias, to recognize and root it out. You know, in Wisconsin, in Portage County, we're over 95% Caucasian. So when there are people who are arrested that are non-white, you know, those stats really do stick out. And we want to be careful on what our stats look like, and we always look at them. But I really can't speak to it. You would need someone who has more background in it. It's probably a complicated issue. But at the end of the day, no one supports, obviously, racial profiling. We don't support prosecuting one population over the other. In fact, when I see charges come over electronically, I don't see their race. I don't see their gender or their race unless I look for it, right? And I frankly don't want to know. I look at the criminal history, the charge, and the circumstance, not whether they're Black or white.
Chris, you live in Wisconsin now, but you are also, as we mentioned, the former mayor of Edgewater, Colorado. If Wisconsin eventually legalizes marijuana, what lessons from the Edgewater experience would you like state legislators to take into consideration as they're forming their rules?
Well, that's a loaded question.
Sure it is.
How long do we have this wish list to talk about regulations? Okay. So notwithstanding all ancillary factors and, you know, criminal justice and whatnot, let's just get to that point where, hey, let's say the legislature is going to do this. I would like the state to set their regulations, their state taxes low, and let the local jurisdictions, whether that's county, municipalities, decide for themselves if they want to regulate and allow the industry in their own communities. And that can be cultivation, processing, infusion licenses, extraction licenses, dispensary licenses. There's a myriad of different licenses that can go there. What we've seen in Illinois is that just to get in to the application game, you have to have over $10, $15 million just to apply. So one of the things that I would definitely keep in mind on is if we're going to do this, there has to be economic opportunity here for entrepreneurial endeavors, for small business-minded people. You're not going to invite multi-state operators with deep pockets that are basically going to scoop those licenses up and leave most ordinary Wisconsinites behind. And that's something that I don't want to see. And when you're talking the tax structure, if there's certain ways to talk about the social equity, if the state's going to do a social equity program, let's actually carve out real capital, real training for those businesses to be up and running and be done. And then second, taxes going to the local communities that are going to be part of this experiment. I think they deserve most of that taxation.
Louis, there's been a lot of discussion over the past year about what the government should be able to regulate. We can just look to the debate over mask wearing, for example, and vaccination related to COVID. Many people are saying the government shouldn't be able to tell me as an adult what I should or should not be able to put in my body. When we shift that argument to a marijuana lens, what do you say to that? Does the government have a right to tell adults what they can and cannot put in their own bodies?
Well, in Portage County and in statewide in November of 2018, Portage County voted in favor 28,000 plus to 5,000 in favor of legalizing medical marijuana. That's in 2018, and many statewide referendums also, including the conservative WOW counties of Waukesha, Ozaukee, and another one there. And so even in the most conservative districts, they're supporting medical marijuana. But I would tell the public, you know, this is your government. You know, it's a republic, if you'll have it. And you have elected representatives. We're supposed to represent the will of the people. Here the people are saying they want medical marijuana legalized in Portage County. And as a result of that, their district attorney took the policy from that vote and stopped and changed how we prosecute. We divert them. But we still understand that there's a social cost to just an unfettered system. That's why they regulate alcohol. They tried to make it illegal at one point, and we had Al Capone and other people because of it. So now we have a different way of looking at it. And I think that's Chris's point, which is regulate it and move on. But, you know, I'm not one to just say, just open it wide up. There needs to be a lot of discussion, especially the doctor's point of view. And hear from law enforcement. They're the people in day-to-day dealing with people who do have a lot of AODA issues, right? They're not just the average professionals maybe using, going to a dispensary, have a lot of extra cash. We really have to look at the people that have social problems, less money, who are using, and seeing how that affects the entire system, right? And that's why we have a government.
Let's shift briefly to the environment. Chris, some environmental groups are concerned that growing marijuana harms the environment, that cannabis plants require nearly double the amount of water needed to grow, like grapes and tomatoes, for example. And legal indoor growing requires a whole lot of electricity. So they're worried about the greenhouse gas emissions. What do you say to that?
It sure does. Yeah, that's an issue. But there are states, you know, especially Massachusetts and California, and I think Michigan's probably going to come online to be more sustainable in those practices, you know, switching the different kind of lighting in those cultivation centers, adding solar, adding a bigger portfolio. But, you know, in a lot of ways, I'm going to put that on the bigger stakeholders. Our big energy suppliers and the other large infrastructure that is fueling the entire civilization of this globe.
It, just one brief last question, Louis. Minnesota has had legal medical marijuana for years now. Michigan and Illinois legalized marijuana in recent years. Wisconsin's kind of an island now, so to speak. So do you think there will be increasing pressure on lawmakers to legalize moving forward?
I think so. And look, if Senator Bernier and Representative Sortwell can put this forward in a very, very, very conservative legislature, that should tell you something. And, you know, if we can get the state patrol, the law changed to issue citations for marijuana so they don't always have to issue the criminal charge. That's another change that needs to happen, by the way. But I think we're moving in that direction. People support medical marijuana. I did when I was a legislator. And I think that's appropriate. And, you know, every state that's done medical eventually goes legalization. But you got to start small. You got to get the people involved and the resources there. You can't just open it all up. Otherwise, there will be problems.
All right. That's all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests, Chris Teagarden from the Wisconsin Cannabis Association, Portage County District Attorney Louis Malepsky, and Dr. Robert Guthrow from the Medical College of Wisconsin and North Central Healthcare. Our producer is Joy Ratch-Kramer. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Rick is also our on-air producer today. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at wpr.org/Route 51. Next week, we'll talk with the leaders of Iron Bull, a Wausau-based organization bringing extreme sports and major tourism dollars to central Wisconsin. And in 2 weeks, a look at the wolf hunt in the region. Until then, we're heading out of town.